when you tell somebody something, it's usually not just to say a bunch of words. Like, for example, think about an example. Suppose you are giving somebody directions to the hike house. They say, I want to sign up for a hike. Can you tell me how to get there? Well, you might say, yeah, I can. But I don't want to. Or you might say, yeah, you just go down the street until you get to the last building and it's on the left. Or you might say, yes, you go out to the corner and you look both ways, make sure there's no traffic coming, and then you walk down the road until you meet somebody who's walking past you and you say, have you passed the hike house? And if they say yes, then you know you're going in the right direction. There's all kinds of ways you can tell them. And you're probably timing what you're saying according to whether they look like they understand what you're saying or not. So really, that's what it's about. It's communicating an idea or a motivation or trying to get what you want out of somebody. And that means you're making a connection with them. Now, there's a lot of ways that you make connections. You make connections by looking people in the eye. What are some other ways that you connect when you're talking to somebody?
Touching.
Say their name.
Say their name. What else? Gestures, body language, good. Along with body language, what else?
Facial expression.
Facial expression. Does what you wear have any kind of effect on the way you contact somebody? Suppose you're going to a job interview. Yes. Of course, you'd be very careful to wear the appropriate clothes in that case. Or suppose you're going to do some of the yard work here. Would you go in high heels and earrings to garden? They wouldn't take you very seriously, would they? So what you wear is another way that you communicate what you want and how you're going to tell your story and everything. Everything. About yourself. Some people say clothes make the person. I don't think that's entirely true. However, I do think that reminds me of the story that I'm going to tell you. I've been wondering what story I'm going to tell you as an example of all this. And I guess the one that I want to tell you is a story called The Woman of Wood. Because it goes a little bit farther than simply the techniques of communicating well with other people. And I'm not going to say anything more about it because I want you to make the decision about what it's about, really. This story takes place in any large city, but let's say it's taking place in Minneapolis, Minnesota, since that's where I live. And in Minneapolis, Minnesota, there's an area called the West Bank, where a lot of people hang out, a lot of different kinds of people, especially artists, students, and sometimes professionals. One day, a teacher from North Hennepin Community College and an account exec from Kenwood, which is a fancy district in Minneapolis, and, well, sort of fancy, kind of shabby too. It's one of those sort of fashionably shabby neighborhoods. And hippie, an old hippie, carpenter, all set out to go camping on the St. Croix, which is a river north of Minneapolis. Now, on the way, they were hit by this enormous storm, a really bad electrical storm, and had to stop before they even got out of town. They ended up on the West Bank at the New Riverside Cafe, where they sat down and they started to talk while they were waiting out the storm. And they became such good friends that they decided they'd go camping together the next weekend. The next weekend, the three of them set out. And this time they got as far as Taylor's Falls on the St. Croix when the storm broke. These storms can be pretty terrifying because they pull up everything in their path, including trees, telephone poles, houses of all sorts. It's just an... And they really wreck a lot of damage, and many people have been known to be been killed in them. So when the storm raged on, they decided to stop the car and get out and take cover in the ditch. They were hovering together in the ditch underneath some big bushes when the carpenter said, "You know, I think you should tell us a story." And the account exec agreed that he would do that. So he started telling the story, and then the teacher said, "No, I think I'd better take over." So then the teacher started telling the same story, and meanwhile, the carpenter was carving on a big branch that had fallen off one of the trees. Hours later, near dawn, the storm subsided. And in the early morning light, they looked at what the carpenter had carved. It was a beautiful woman, a woman of wood. So they called her Dubiago, which means wood in Russian, interestingly enough. And after they had named her that, they realized that she could smile at them, but she chose to frown instead. For she was carved with a smile, but as soon as they started looking at her, her mouth dropped. And not only that, but she stood up and started walking around. "Well, this is amazing. You have created the most beautiful woman anyone's ever seen, and she can walk? Can she talk?" So the teacher started to talk to her, question her. He said, "What's your name?" She just smiled at him, and then she frowned again. He said, "What, do you know where you live?" And she just looked blankly at him. "Do you know where you are?" And she looked blankly at him. He said, "Do you have a voice?" And she made some sounds deep in her throat. Oh. So he knew that she could hear her and that she did have a voice. "Aha! I shall teach her how to talk. I shall teach her how to read. I shall teach her how to think. How to ask questions. Yes, I will tell her her name." So he proceeded to educate her. And while he was educating her, the account exec said, "You know, I think it's high time she learned how to handle herself in the world. I'm going to take her out. I'm going to show her where all the right places are to go. And I'm going to make sure she goes there with all the right people. And I'm going to make sure that they all see her and get to know her," which he did. He took her out, and they met all the right people in all the right places. She became the toast of the town. Not only was she beautiful, she was very bright, and she could speak very well. So everyone was very impressed with her, including the carpenter, the account exec, and the teacher. Now, one night, they all decided to go over to the West Bank, to the Riverside Cafe where they had met. They had finished dinner, and at that point, the carpenter said, "Well, I thought you should be the first to know. I have decided to marry Dubiago." To his surprise, the teacher and the account exec were horrified. "You have no right to do that. Why, the idea After all, said the teacher, I've taught her everything she knows. If anybody marries her, it should be me. Huh, said the account exec. She wouldn't be anywhere if I hadn't taken her out in the world and shown her how to get around and given her all those nice clothes. Come on, you guys, you know I'm the one who deserves to have her. So they started fighting. And they left the restaurant and walked over to the corner. They were fighting so loudly that the bouncer from the neighborhood bar came out and asked them to please put their voices down. So they told him the problem they were having. They said, now look, which one of us do you think should get her? And the bouncer says, hey, wait a second, I'm just a bouncer. I don't make decisions like that. But look, see that guy coming down the street? And they look, there was this old hippie coming down the street with gray hair and gray beard. He said, that's Pastor Bob of the West Bank Lutheran Campus Ministry. Why don't you ask him? He's a pretty wise guy. He might be able to help you out. When Pastor Bob approached, they told him their problem. And he listened very gravely to their question. Who should marry this beautiful woman? Yes, he said. You know, I can see the point. You, Carpenter, why, you created her. She wouldn't exist if it hadn't been for you. My thought exactly, sir. Thank you so much. Wait a minute, I didn't say you could have her yet. Because, after all, the account exec has done an important service to this young woman. For if he hadn't given her a good wardrobe and taken her out and shown her around, why, she wouldn't have any place in the world. Nobody'd know who she was or where she came from. And she wouldn't be able to get a job or survive. So it's really obvious that, yes, I should have her. Thank you, sir. I didn't say that. No. The teacher has not only taught her how to talk, and taught her how to think so that she can ask questions and learn things. The teacher has opened her mouth and laughed. And then she said, thank you. You know I am grateful that you carved me, and you carved me so well, Carpenter. And she gave him a hug. Then she went to the account exec, and she said, you have introduced me to some of the most important people in town, and I know that I am going to be very grateful for that, as I am for your friendship. And then she turned to the teacher and she said, and you, dear teacher, without you, I wouldn't know who I was or how the world is made. I wouldn't know how to learn anything about the world I'm in. Thank you so much. But she looked at Pastor Bob and said, I choose you because you gave me my freedom. And then she took his wrinkled old hand in her hand and his bent old body straightened up and his gray hair fell off and he was a young, strong, handsome man again. And they walked off together to live happily ever after. Now, I used to think that the ending to that story was all wet. I thought, you know, you can be happy. She shouldn't have to, the old man shouldn't have to change into a young man in order for her to be happily wed to him. But then I started thinking about it and I thought, no, you know, the thing is, it's not the literal fact that he becomes young. It's that the love relationship is what transforms him just as his gift to her transformed her. And that's what that's what's happening to me in that story. That's an old folk tale. That's an old Russian folk tale. That's why her name is Dubiago. And I got it out of a picture book, actually, at the library, which is an interesting place to get stories if you're interested in telling folk tales. Of course, I fiddled around with it a little bit. And I like fiddling around with stories a little bit. So now, we're going to play a game, a listening game, to help us pay attention when we tell stories and when we listen to other people's stories. Doris, you've played this game before, so will you help me demonstrate this?
All right.
Now, in this game, you want to sit there, can you stand up so they can see you?
Sure.
It's kind of important for them to be able to see.
Yeah.
In this game, we try to make exactly the same sound that the other person is making. We start off just with sounds, and then after we accomplish the sounds, we move into words. All right, so here's the first part of the exercise. Should I start?
Mm-hmm. Or
do you want to? Okay. So that's why we want to go kind of slowly. Now, the next part is the words.
I'm so glad you're here.
Are you going to eat soon? Good. See, you can almost anticipate because you can get into the thought pattern. So you can almost anticipate what's going to happen. So when I'm walking around listening to you, I want to almost wonder now who's leading and who's following, you know? All right, now we're just going to do 1 minute each for this. And we're going to divide up into partners. And couples are going to be separated. So you two can be partners. You are going to have to go over here and be her partner. You can split up and get into a corner or go anywhere you want. You don't have to stay in the seats that you're in.
You two.
You, how about you and Doris? You two. How about you and her? You and me. Just look at each other very carefully. That's the most important thing, is to use all your senses to observe.
Go ahead.
No, that's your turn. Okay, now, next step. You can get yourselves comfortable, move a chair over to where you are, or move back to your chairs, and to your partner, tell a 3-minute story. And your partner is going to listen extremely carefully to every single word, every pause, every gesture, because when you both are through, you're going to tell each other's story to the rest of us. Okay, go for it. A story about yourself, a story about someone you know, a story about an interesting relationship you've had at work, at Holden, at home, or someplace in between.
My name is Irvin, and when I was growing up, I lived in Kansas, and I lived on a farm. And my father had somewhat of a debt, like most farmers had in that time. And took some really hard work to pay the interest and get the farm paid off. So they all worked very hard. And I think I've missed out already.
No, don't worry. Just keep going. Don't stop.
Don't
just
stop.
Pretend.
You're doing fine.
Yeah, make it up. And they can correct it later. It's important. You have married to the wrong person.
we all worked together, and of course that was at the time that they were using horses and instead of tractors. And we would do the plant all of the wheat and grain, and in the winter time, or in the fall and in the winter time, it would begin to grow, and in the summertime it would begin to, in the spring it would begin to shoot up, and then in the summer the heads would come, and then it would be harvested, and when we harvested, we had a type of machinery that cut the grain, and then there was a binding machine that had a type of thing that would put a big needle over that would bind it with the thread all over, and make big stacks of it. And then when a machine would come and take the stacks and make bigger stacks. And that was the end of my time.
Oh, my God. Grand hour of time. I was seeing fields of haystacks there. How old were you when you did that?
Well, I spent my youth on the farm till I was 20 years old.
there's a lot to be learned from farm work. Are you going to tell her story now?
Myra was born in Southern California, and when she was 6 years old, and she and her grandmother went up into the northern part of California to the area called Palomar, where they were going to, well, they didn't, at that time, they just bought a piece of, or a lot that they paid $75 for, and that was their home, and they were living in that area, and then they decided that they were going to build.
Wait a minute. It's we decided, right? Oh, excuse me.
It was decided.
Okay.
that a...
I'm sorry. That's my fault. I'm sorry. I got mixed up. I was thinking you were talking about yourself. Okay.
It was decided that they were going to build the telescope facility at Palomar. So they lived in a very good area. But at the time when they moved there, there wasn't any good roads. And they decided, after they started construction on this Palomar facility, they decided they wanted to go see what was going on. And they had to hike there. And they got into quite a few troubles hiking there. They had to climb over the manzanita bushes, and it was slow going. What should have been an hour's trip was a whole day. And that was about the end of the story.
Boy, did they ever get up there?
Yes, we managed to get there.
You were the ones that were climbing.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so when you tell the stories after this, remember that you have to use the first person. So instead of saying they, it's we. We thought we'd never get there. See, because you're talking like her. You're talking as if you are her. And anybody else that's telling the story, talk as the person that you're telling the story of. Is there any confusion about that? Oh, good. Let's go on. You ready? We're not going to go in total sequence.
Why don't you have a start?
Okay.
I'm Doris Johnson. I live in Concord, California. And when my husband and I moved to Concord, one of my very favorite things to do is volunteer work. So when we moved, we left all of our family and friends behind in Sacramento. And I was looking for an opportunity to do volunteer work. So I looked in the newspaper and found an ad for a handicapped children's center that was looking for volunteer workers. And I went and visited the center and decided that that's what I wanted to do. So I came home and told my family, and my children and my family said, "Oh, Mother, you don't want to do that. Why don't you go and volunteer at a school? It will be so difficult to work with handicapped children." And I said, "No. There'll be other people that will work in schools with children that don't have handicaps, and I want to work with the handicapped kids because other people won't want to do that, and they need me." So that turned out to be a 17-year volunteer work, and it taught me to be so very grateful for the health of my own four children, that it had really been a blessing to me to be able to experience that gratefulness that I would not have otherwise experienced.
Thank you.
Very nice.
I'm Dee, and I'm from Puyallup, Washington. And I am very involved in my church. And I've seen it grow from, 3 acres that we bought? And I helped build it. I swept the dirt out and pounded the nails and seen it grow from the very beginning. And one time I was riding along with one of my acquaintances, and I said, "Oh, there's my church." After it was built 3 years later. And she said, "Oh, is that your church? You mean you own it?" And she says, "Well, sure, I'm part of the church. And I love the people there, and I consider myself part of it." And she, it was hard for her to understand the relationship between Dee and the church because she wasn't a church person herself.
Oh, that's a good story. How about you two?
I'm Rita from Montana.
Hi.
Not so awful many years ago when I was first married, my husband and I were camping out in the wilderness, and I was busy writing thank you notes for showers and stuff, sitting and enjoying the smell of the pine and the breeze and watching my husband fishing down the creek a little ways. And kind of absorbed in the tranquility of all of it. And for some reason, you kind of get that little haunting feeling that you're not alone. And I turned around, and here was this bull moose, close enough to pet if I had the courage. Now, of course, a bull moose isn't the thing you want to pet. In fact, you don't want to be close enough to pet a bull moose. But I turned very slowly and watched him for a little while, and fortunately I was not downwind of him, or he of me, rather. And he eventually just ambled off, but it's just one of those kind of a spooky moments when all of a sudden your life may pass before you and you found that your number wasn't up yet. That's it.
That's a good story. Incidentally, as you hear the story told, I haven't been asking you, but if there's something you want to add that was forgotten, you know, you're allowed to do that.
I'm Jack, and when I was graduating from college and before I kind of finished that part of my life and started on the next part of my life, which would probably be going to Vietnam, I wanted to experience a little bit of life and have as much fun as I could. So a good friend of mine, the kind of good friends you make when you've been in college for a long time with somebody, and I set out on a trip together. And we were going to take our car and then take a motorcycle for sightseeing, quick tours off, and tour as much of the states as we could. When we went to Yellowstone Park, we were camping and in a campsite, and we're just having all kinds of fun passing the cars that had to stop for traffic on our motorcycle and things like that, and just really having a gay time. We went off to a bar and danced and enjoyed ourselves, and when we came back about midnight, we came back because there was a girl that we were both interested in, and we thought it would be best if we went home and separated and flipped a coin and decided which one of us should go back and pursue that interest. But on the way into our campground, we saw some people that were camping next to us that we'd gotten friendly with, and we stopped to say hi since their lantern was still on and their kids were in bed, but they were still up. And they said, by the way, while you were gone, you had a visitor, and we couldn't really imagine who unless it was some friends that knew we would be camping there. It wasn't them, it was a bear. And they said that they had gone over and rectified what they could out of our camp after the bear had been through our tent pretty thoroughly. So we got there, we flipped a coin, decided my friend won the toss, and he went back, took the car, and went back to the dance. And I was laying there in my sleeping bag, and I could hear some noises, and was not sure how far away those noises were, because distance really does travel long ways in quiet mountains. But you could tell it was not 2 feet, it was 4 feet, and you could tell it was something in the garbage cans, and you could hear kind of so I stayed in the tent, and pretty soon my friend came back, and as the headlights and a flashlight
hit coming into the tent, the eyes of a bear were right outside the tent door. So my mother still has the butter dish with the bear teeth marks in it. It's Tupperware, and it has not been replaced.
My name is Julie from Oregon. Another couple and we were going to decided that we were going to climb to Glacier Peak, and Image Lake and Glacier Peak. And our parents were a little concerned, so they, my parents and their parents, took us all to the end of the trail, and so that we get a little head start. The weather was just gorgeous, and we started out all full of vim and vigor, just raring to go. And we hadn't gone very far until the clouds started gathering. And before we knew it, we were in a heavy rainstorm. And we kept thinking, well, it'll pass, it'll pass. We made our camp, but it didn't pass, and it just kept raining and raining and raining. So just the last day, we were able to get up to our destination, and the sun broke through the clouds, and the ranger came, saw us coming and met us, and she told us that we were the first group to come through in 4 days. She says, it's been raining solid for 4 days.
Wow, what a triumph.
Yes, but this story is longer, so that's why my story had to be real quick.
Yeah, I don't think she told it all.
I'm Doris from California. My husband and I were on one of our world tours in Europe, and before we left to come back to the States, we wanted to make sure that we would be able to go to Prague, Czechoslovakia, because being a geologist, he wanted to do some research there at the university. So we landed in Prague and were getting settled in our hotel, and then we went over to the university to make arrangements for the study with the professors. And I also went to a kindergarten because I was interested in studying what the kindergartens of that country were like. After having made these arrangements, we went back to our hotel and settled in for the night. And we were both very tired. And as we were falling asleep, we heard lots of heavy footsteps. And we, you know, couldn't figure out what was happening. Being so tired, we just went to sleep and thought we wouldn't worry about that. The next morning, we came downstairs to the hotel, and we noticed people were reading newspapers and looking very serious. No one was talking, and of course, even if they were talking, we wouldn't know what they were saying. So we kind of looked around for someone that might be a tourist also or be able to help us find out what was happening. And soon we saw some fellow Americans that we knew, and they had found out and came to tell us that the Russians had entered, is this correct?
Yeah.
This is, okay. The Russians had entered that night, that's what we heard, and that everything had changed in that short period of time. The airports had been closed, there was no transportation available, that we were stuck, everything had stopped. And of course, this is why people were looking so concerned. Well, we were really concerned because here we were with our arrangements made, and now we were stuck. We didn't know what to do. We were advised that perhaps we should leave as soon as possible, and the only way we could leave was by train, but the station was 3 miles away, and there would be no taxi service to the station. And of course, we wanted to leave as soon as possible. So we started figuring out how to check our luggage and take what we could, what was important with us, and hoping to get the rest of it out later. And we're just starting to set out on foot for the train station when taxis started rolling up. And we found out it was the youth organization in Czechoslovakia who had decided to help all of us evacuate, who were sent to take us out. We got to the train station. The train was just packed with people like ourselves fleeing, getting out of there as fast as they could. And I need to ask more questions about that.
Did she remember?
She remembered it all, but I didn't tell her the whole story.
And, all of a sudden, I thought, am I telling this?
Oh, you had so many details.
Yeah.
It's history.
You did very well.
Good. I better go over and the dog house myself. There's a 5 o'clock with the parenting thing at 6.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Bye-bye.
My name is Irene, and this story is about my daughter, whose name is Rita.
Oh.
We lived near the bottom of what's called Airport Hill, and my daughter, Rita, was in the habit of getting up early in the morning to do her schoolwork. And her father, my husband, had told her that the sunrise in the morning was very beautiful from the top of Airport Hill. Well, this was a Friday morning, and my daughter went to Mass and then walked up Airport Hill to see the sunrise. I didn't realize that she had gone up to the hill. I just thought that she had gone to Mass and then was coming home to do her schoolwork and eat breakfast and go to school. Well, it came time for her to go to school, and she still wasn't home yet. So I called down to the station for my husband to ask if he knew where she was, and he didn't know. Well, right about then, she comes running in the door and said, "The police interrogated me, stopped me, and questioned me. Apparently there had been a murder on top of Airport Hill under the water tower, and she had gone up that morning and watched the sunrise, and the murdered body lay not very far away under the water tower."
Oh, yes. I bet she was in a terrible state.
Her.
That was
you? Yeah, you? Oh. I'm trying to get enough sense to say, why are you asking me all these questions? I said, we were
murdered. My name is Peter, and I went with my aunt and uncle up the trail here to a lake. I forgot the name of the lake.
Lyman Lake. Mm-hmm.
And we were going to camp overnight, and I was a ways ahead of them. And I saw the lake, and I was very thirsty, so I stopped to bend over to get a drink. And as I did that, I heard a growl, not in a distance, but not too far away either. And as I slowly raised my head to look, I saw this bear across the lake. And he stood and looked and growled and finally trotted off. And I was very happy.
That I would be too. All I was around that.
Was last summer.
Oh, man. Was it a black bear?
Black bear, yeah. Not far away.
I've met a few black bears. Fortunately, no grizzlies. Where's your partner? Did she have to leave?
She's
the one I had to go? Well, you tell your story. Oh, do you
mind that too?
Okay, why? Well, you can't tell each other's stories.
No.
Why don't you each tell your own story? Go ahead.
Eat.
That's good enough. The bell hasn't rung yet. It's not really quite 5.
Oh, All right.
Well, I have children to meet there that will wonder where I'm at.
Would you hear the bell in here? Oh, yeah, you'll hear it. You can go if you
No, I would want to. I would love to hear the stories. Oh, I just don't want them looking around.
Well, just leave. When the bell rings, just feel free to go. Do you want to tell it?
No, that's okay. I really don't have any story. We just exchange information.
But you'd be surprised how those things turn into stories.
Well, mine's just a little short incident that happened.
I knew you were ready to tell. I could just tell by that little tiny face.
My name is Evelyn. I live in Puyallup. I know two people here, Dee and my daughter, Julie over there. I have a niece I do many things with, and she has a darling little boy who's not quite three. And he didn't talk for a long, long time, and then when he started, he just asked questions, and he just keeps right, he has just kept right on going. So we were out at our mall one morning shopping, and we were going to leave to go home about 11 o'clock, but we found a few more things we needed to buy, and we were looking at this and that, and he kept telling us he was hungry. And his mother always has him in bed by 1 o'clock, and he's much better behaved after that, and he goes to a babysitter, so that's his pattern. So we kept shopping, and he kept wanting to eat, so we decided that we'd eat on the way home. So we went out of the mall and stopped at Rack's. It's a fast food place with a wonderful salad bar. And we got him his little cardboard box of little, it was peanut butter and jelly that he wanted, that he had in there. We went to the salad bar, and then we went back again and made ourselves a large taco salad, and we gave him a little chocolate pudding, and we were very happily eating, and he looked around a little bit, and he says, "This isn't McDonald's."
I want you to tell first.
Okay. What was her last name?
Stankovich. We're cheating.
We have the longest time in between to remember here. My name is Maren, which is a Scandinavian name. And I'm telling a story back when I was in fourth grade. And it was not too long after World War II. And there were many displaced persons that needed a home in America. We lived in Clear Lake, Iowa. My father was the pastor there, and he had a good friend who was trying to relocate many of the displaced persons. And he had talked a long time to my father, and my father also talked to many parishioners. And we decided that we could take some displaced persons. So they were people from the Baltic country. And so we took Mrs. Stankovich. And I do believe that she had a first name, and I think her first name was Juliana. But she was always Mrs. Stankovich. And she had two children that were just about my age, Udo and Ursula. I remember that Ursula had beautiful long braids. And since they were very close in age to myself, they came to school with me. And naturally, they didn't know a word of English. So back and forth to school, I would point and say an English word and just try to help them with their English. And we soon became very fast friends. And I can remember a moment of special friendship, or when I remembered that it happened. Ursula was going to school, and for one of the very first times, she started to speak some English. And so I said to her, "Ursula, I feel like we're almost sisters." And I know that she didn't really understand my English, but she must have understood some of what I said, because she just took my hand and held hands tightly.
Beautiful. I wish I could tell it that well. My name is Linda. I wonder what I should tell you about me. Well, I guess I'll tell you that I'm an honorary grandmother. This is how it happened. We had a son who was living with us. He wasn't our real son, but he stayed with us because his home situation was so painful and difficult. He lived with us for a long time, and when he left, he got married, and one day I was making tomato preserves, preserving tomatoes, with another woman who was living with us from Nigeria. Her name was Grace. And Grace and I can remember this so well. We were in the kitchen, and we were just taking the tomatoes and putting them in the hot jars. We'd sterilize the jars when the phone rang. And I had to wipe my hands on my apron. I remember that apron, too, to answer the phone. I got the phone, and it was Tom. And he said, "We had a baby boy." And I was so happy when we hung up and rejoiced for the fact that I was a grandmother, an honorary grandmother at that. I haven't done that for a long time. That was very good for me. Because I realize that I get very carried away with the stories and then I forget. Well, thank you very much, everybody. And next time we have a session, we're going to do stories as an act of faith. And we're going to deal with trust. And how do you trust? Trust your story, trust people in your lives, and trust your audience.